This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.
Welcome to The Tonic, your prescription for a healthier and happier life. Here's your host and publisher of The Tonic newsletter, Jamie Bussin.
Hi, I'm Jamie Bussin. I'm a former commercial litigator who used to weigh 242 pounds. When I was 38 years old, I lost over 50 pounds through a regimen of exercise and better nutrition. It took me a year to reach my goal, but I thought if a type A personality like me could do it, really anybody can. I'm still asking questions and learning about what it means to live a healthy lifestyle. Please join me on this continuing journey. Today, we'll discuss the health benefits of vitamin B with master herbalist Joel Thuna. We'll learn about the hidden cause of erectile dysfunction with biochemist Dr. Judith Swack. We'll discover the impact of thyroid disease in women with patient advocate Joanne Koski and Thyroid Foundation President Laz Boris. And lastly, we'll find out how epigenetics can impact your biological age with fitness coach Jason Nelson. Before we get to that, here's your tonic quick shot. A major new review of research suggests that collagen supplements may offer real health benefits in some areas, but not in others. The study, published in the Aesthetic Surgery Journal Open Forum, combined results from 16 systematic reviews, 113 randomized control trials, and nearly 8,000 participants worldwide. Researchers from Anglia Ruskin University found that collagen supplementation can improve skin health, including hydration and elasticity, especially when taken over longer periods. The review also showed that collagen may help reduce pain and stiffness in people with osteoarthritis. Some benefits were also seen in muscle mass, muscle structure, and tendon structure, suggesting a possible role for collagen in healthy aging. However, these improvements were generally moderate rather than dramatic. In contrast, the study found little evidence that collagen improves sports performance or recovery after exercise. It did not reduce muscle soreness or significantly improve tendon function after activity. The review also looked at oral health and metabolic measures such as cholesterol, blood pressure, and blood sugar, but found mixed or unclear results. Overall, researchers concluded that collagen is not a cure-all, but may support certain aspects of skin and joint health when used consistently over time. They also called for more high-quality studies to better understand long-term effects and proper dosing. Question: what's the best way to make sure you're getting the most up-to-date and accurate health and wellness information? Answer: The Tonic newsletter, of course. Visit www.thetonic.ca and sign up today. I'll be joined by Joel Thuna in a moment, but first, a little bit of business. Feeling tired, low on energy, or simply not getting enough vitamin B12? Discover the difference with Purely Organic Active B12. Made with premium active methylcobalamin, the natural form your body absorbs and uses instantly. Unlike common synthetic B12 supplements, Purely Organic Active B12 contains no colors, flavors, sweeteners, or preservatives. Just clean, organic, vegan support for energy, endurance, and nervous system health. Purely Organic Active B12. Pure energy, naturally made in Canada. Joel Thuna is a master herbalist and general manager of Purely Natural. He strives to improve the quality of natural products on the market and passes along his knowledge of herbal remedies through lectures and articles. He's also a frequent guest on the show. Welcome, Joel. How are you?
I am doing awesome. I thank God summer is finally here.
Yay, summer. So we're going to talk about vitamin B12 today. Yep. B12 specifically, right? Not Correct. The B complex, but B12.
Yep, we're going to isolate out B12 because it is my favorite B because it is the most important B.
Okay. So it's often called the energy vitamin. Yep. What makes this such a fundamental nutrient to our overall health and vitality?
What most people don't know is vitamin B12 is required for so many systems, but not just the systems themselves, but fundamental systems. And because you need it to have your fundamental systems working, that's why it's the most important one.
Vitamin B12 is a nutrient that every cell in the body needs, yep. Yet our bodies don't produce it itself. So why is B12 involved in so many functions throughout the body if we don't produce it? That seems kind of odd.
It does, but it doesn't. What you first have to know is that vitamin B12 is the most complex vitamin when it comes to its structure. And because of that, your body can use it in so many different ways when it breaks it apart and uses it. It's also required for your fundamental systems like cardiovascular health, neurological health, and a big one, energy. And through that also, through red blood cell production and actually creating your DNA.
So, you know, we live in a hectic society.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, when I'm having a stressful day, I can feel tired, I can feel fatigued, and certain parts of the day I get a little foggy in the brain. Can B12 help us with that?
Actually, it's quite interesting. By sheer coincidence, this morning on my way in here, I was listening to a report on B12 and its role in preventing brain fog and also lethargy and restlessness. And what they found is that most people attribute those to lack of sleep, when actually B12 is more fundamental, and B12 has an inverse relationship. The less B12 you have, the more likely you are to have all of those concerns.
So B12 does three main things. It's energy production, nervous system support, and red blood cell formation. Those are the big three. Which of these do you think people most overlook when it comes to this, and why?
I think most people overlook the red blood cell production because we just take it for granted. Being human, we're a bit obtuse in the fact that we just expect stuff within us to work every day. One of which is we expect oxygen and the right amount of oxygen to get to each of our cells as it's needed, and there we go. The only time people tend to think about it and notice is like, okay, I'm feeling lethargic today, I've got brain fog, I've got a headache, I've got muscle pain. And then they start going back and going, oh, okay, maybe if I do this, maybe if I do this, maybe if I do this. But the one they never think of is B12.
Right. My understanding is that some people are more sensitive to the effects of B12 than others, depending on their blood type or their physiology. Is that something you're aware of?
I haven't read that in the clinical trials.
Okay.
I've heard it anecdotally.
Right, yeah.
But I haven't actually read that.
Okay. There are different types of B12 that one can purchase on the market, right? They're not all the same. Methylcobalamin is one, and I understand that's the gold standard.
Yep.
What is it, and how does it differ from the more common other types of B12, which I think is called cyanobialamin? Is that right?
Cyanocobalamin.
Cobalamin?
Yeah,
okay.
It's methylcobalamin and cyanocobalamin.
Okay, so what are the difference between the two?
The biggest difference that will resonate with people is methylcobalamin is natural. It's as it's found in nature, and it's the one that your body is designed to use. Cyanocobalamin is laboratory created. It's synthetic. And the biggest difference between them from a consumer point of view beyond that is their price point. Methylcobalamin is more expensive. There is no question of that. But the key differences are well worth it. It's more active in you and you get more out of it.
Is it more bioavailable? Is that what you're saying?
Dramatically.
Okay.
Dramatically more.
Presumably, when you're buying B12 on the market, it should say which type it is, right?
Yes.
Are you required as a manufacturer to put that on your label? Do you know?
You're not required, but the vast majority of companies do. The thing is, if your product that you're buying does not say methylcobalamin, or another term for it would be active vitamin B12, it means they're not using it. You would hype it if you're using it.
Okay, so if it is more bioavailable, for those who don't understand what mm-hmm. that means, like why do we want our supplement to be more bioavailable? What's the difference?
The easiest way to put it is your body is designed to use it. And with the big thing here is that your body can use methylcobalamin, the active vitamin B12, as it is. It doesn't have to do anything to get it to work. It doesn't have to do anything to get to use it. With cyanocobalamin, your body has to actually take it, break it down, filter out the toxic bits of it, handle those, and then convert it to an active form. And every step in that conversion, you lose potency and you lose stability with it. So what ends up happening is your body ends up breaking it down. And while it's breaking it down, you lose some and it doesn't last in you as long.
Okay. So you kind of get what you pay for then, right? I mean,
definitely.
Right? Like you're paying more for the more bioavailable one, but then your body can take it up much more easily.
Correct.
Which is important because like other types of supplements, as we get older, it's harder for our body to absorb the nutrient, right?
Correct.
And so who should be paying more particular attention to the bioavailability? Like at what point, at what age do we start, does that start to really matter?
It starts to really matter in your early 40s.
Okay.
Because all of us, I'm past that too. All of us, just as humans, as we age, our ability to digest our digest our foods and digest our nutrients and absorb them from our foods decreases. And with B12, it's quite dramatic. On top of your age, you should also be concerned and keep a notice of this if you're diabetic, if you suffer from acid reflux, any digestive conditions, and also if you have allergies.
Okay, so before people supplemented, they got this vitamin through their food, I presume?
Yes.
So what are the types of foods that you might get it from, and why is it that we're not getting enough from our food today?
Well, it's primarily, in fact, virtually exclusively found in animal-based foods.
Okay.
And the problem is that as we age, our ability to digest animal-based foods goes down. I used to be able to have gorgeous, huge steaks. I cannot anymore.
Right.
And on top of that, the actual levels in our foods has gone down at the same time. It's a combination of both those things together that has caused us to deplete.
So B12 supports different groups in unique ways, from cardiovascular and physical performance in men to mood and reproductive health in women to cognitive development in children. Can you walk us through sort of the life stage benefits of B12?
Sure. For women, for example, B12 is key for the production of the neurotransmitter serotonin and dopamine, both of which are key to mood regulation and also motivation. With children, it's B12 is key for brain development, and also it is required for maintaining the myelin sheath, which is the protective film that goes around all of our nerve cells. And for men, what it does is it keeps homocysteine in check. And for listeners who don't know, homocysteine is a protein that is directly linked to cardiovascular disease risk. So you want to keep that sucker in check. On top of that, with men, B12 is found to help the oxygen get to your cells, especially muscle cells. And with men, they find that you get those bursts where you're using a ton of, you're doing a ton of activity. If you don't have enough B12 in you, you don't get as much energy, endurance, and it'll take a lot longer to recover.
Which are issues that I'm dealing with right now. We were speaking before we went live, and I was explaining how, you know, I keep injuring myself when I'm exercising, and I've got a new personal trainer because I'm trying to fix that. And, you know, some of the things that we're discussing is supplementation before and after and recovery periods so that I can continue to kind of do the stuff that I like to do and remain healthy as I get older. B12, is it fat soluble or water soluble?
It is water soluble, and that brings up a problem with it.
Right.
Being it's water soluble, our bodies naturally deplete and flush it out on a daily basis.
Like vitamin C.
Correct. With B12, that's one of the reasons you have to supplement with a good source, an absorbable source, every day to maintain your health levels.
All right. So let's talk about ways of taking B12. Mm-hmm. Pills, liquids, what are your recommendations? What's out there and what's best?
There's tons out there.
Right.
It's universal. It's everywhere. The problem is you go into your health food store and there's just this wall and everything is B12, B12, B12. And you're like, oh my gosh. You end up, you have it in pills, you have it in capsules, you have it in gummies, you have it in candies, you have it in everything. However, the best form is a liquid, ideally a sublingual liquid.
Okay.
And for those listeners who don't know, sublingual literally means under the tongue.
Right.
What you want to do ideally is take B12 liquid underneath your tongue, hold it there for about a minute, and then swallow. The advantage to that is your body is able to absorb B12 under your tongue directly into your bloodstream, it completely bypasses your digestive system. And that is very key, because in your digestive system, you require a protein called intrinsic factor. That is what is your body uses to absorb B12. It's used to protect B12 so it can be absorbed.
Okay.
B12 latches onto intrinsic protein, and an intrinsic protein protects it from degradation. Unfortunately, most of us are lacking in that protein, and some of us have none at all. And of course, as we age, intrinsic factor goes down, like everything else. It gets to the point where if you don't have enough intrinsic protein, you could take as much B12 as you want. It would not matter if you're digesting it. Taking it sublingually, there you're actually getting it.
This intrinsic factor, is there a way to test whether you have adequate levels of it? Does that come up in your blood?
It is a blood test. Correct. Yes, it is.
Is that regularly tested for when you do the blood workups for like an annual, or is this something you would have to ask for?
It's something you'd have to ask for. It's not part of the regular panel you'd get every year.
Got it. Okay. Does everybody need the same amount of B12? Like, do children and adults and older adults need the same amount, or is it different depending on activity, age, size? How does that work?
There's slight differences as you age. We're of course not talking infants as you age, but with those, the big advantage is overdosing, not really going to happen.
Okay.
It is incredibly safe because it's water soluble. If you're taking too much,
right,
it just goes out of you. Most people take around 1,000 micrograms of methylcobalamin a day.
Okay. And that's what you would recommend?
That is definitely, yes.
Okay. So when we're looking at that wall of B12, what else should we be looking for in terms of B12? Like, what are some of the issues that you deal with as a manufacturer that you think have value to the consumer?
The first I would say is, without a doubt, certified organic. With it, you want it to be as clean as is physically possible.
Okay.
Vegan, because a lot of products have animal-based products in them, and that just brings up a whole other set of issues. Once you're there, sublingual, make sure it's active B12, could also be written as methylcobalamin. That's M-E-T-H-Y-L, cobalamin. Then you want it to make sure that it's in a liquid form that does not have any colors or flavors. There's no need for colors or flavors.
Well, that was going to be my next question, Joel. The natural form of B12, what does it taste like? Is it all right? If you're holding it under your tongue for a minute, how's it going to taste?
Let me put it to you this way. Quality ones actually have a very, very slight taste and very pleasant.
Okay.
Lower quality products have an almost acrid taste.
Okay, we don't want that.
No, not good.
Well, thanks so much for coming on the show today to explain that.
It's always my pleasure.
That was Joel Thuna. We have to take a short break, but we'll be right back on The Tonic. You already know the importance of exercise for energy, improved strength, and better mobility. What you really need is an expert to show you how to exercise safely. Receive personalized coaching from Fitness Solutions Plus. Learn safe exercises for osteoporosis, diabetes, chronic pain, and balance issues from a fitness specialist. For a free consultation, visit fitnesssolutionsplus.ca, number one in one-on-one fitness for adults over 50. I'd like to give a shout out to our long-standing sponsor, Omega Alpha. This company is 100% Canadian owned. Their team consists of allopathic and naturopathic doctors, nutritionists, researchers, and other scientific professionals, all led by their CEO, Dr. Gordon Chang. Formulations are created on their 40,000 square foot facility located in Toronto. Omega Alpha uses only the highest quality ingredients to manufacture the most efficacious yet price-friendly nutraceuticals. For more information about Omega Alpha, visit OmegaAlpha.com.
Welcome back to The Tonic, your prescription for a healthier and happier life. Here's your host and publisher of The Tonic newsletter, Jamie Bussin.
Judith A. Swack, PhD, is a biochemist, immunologist, and originator of the Healing from the Body Level Up methodology, a comprehensive system designed to clear trauma at the conscious, unconscious, body, and soul levels.
author of Clear Trauma Now, The Powerful Solution for Getting Unstuck. She combines scientific research with decades of clinical experience to help individuals resolve trauma, anxiety, and chronic conditions, often in just a few sessions. Dr. Swack trains professionals worldwide and works with clients who have not found success with traditional approaches. Her work focuses on identifying and clearing the root patterns that drive emotional and physical distress. And to learn more, you can visit hblu.org. Welcome to the show, Judith. How are you?
I'm great. I'm happy to be here, Jamie.
So, in our introduction, we talked about the work that you do, but today we're going to be talking about some very specific work that you do having to do with erectile dysfunction. What do you think about that?
Absolutely. About a third of my clients are men. We work with everything that they want to work with. Any kind of problem they come in with, we handle without blinking. And I found that many of them talked about erectile dysfunction. And I published my book on trauma. My claim to fame is understanding the structure of trauma. And one of the things I talk about in my book is things that are trauma that you didn't realize were trauma, but they are. So I'm going to talk about diagnosis shock. Now, people understand that if a woman is taking a shower and she discovers a lump in her breast, she's immediately going to shock out and go, "Oh no, I have a lump in my breast. It's cancer. I'm going to die." That would be an automatic reflexive reaction to finding a lump in her breast, diagnosis shock. Or you go to a doctor and he takes a test and he says, "I'm sorry, Mrs. Smith, you're showing markers for lupus, which is an autoimmune disease. And I'm going to recommend that you see a rheumatologist for this." Okay, as soon as she hears that bad diagnosis, her unconscious mind is going to go, "Oh no, I have lupus. I'm going to die a slow, painful, tortured death." And then she shocks out. Now, anytime you have a traumatic imprint where your fight or flight reflex goes off, anything that was in the environment at the time that's associated with that issue will trigger a body flashback to that original memory, and you'll continue to have anxiety and phobic reactions to anything related to that context. So let's think about sex. Men, when they're having sex, usually have an erection. And once in a while, to their surprise, they will fail to get an erection when they think they want one. In that moment, their unconscious mind diagnoses, "Oh no, I have erectile dysfunction, and now I'm going to be impotent, and I'm going to be rejected by everybody, and I'll never find love in my life, etc., etc." Which is the classic thing that you do when you have diagnosis shock. But what happens? Every time that person wants to have sex after that, because it's the same context where the original trauma happened, it flashes them back to the original experience emotionally, even if they're not consciously aware of this, and they actually experience performance anxiety. And the fear is that they won't be able to get it up again. Now remember, every time you have a trauma, not only do you have the experience in that moment, but it also comes with the anticipatory fear that it will happen again in the future. So that's what happens with erectile dysfunction. You have an experience of dysfunction, now you have diagnosis shock, boom, you have performance anxiety.
Yeah, first of all, I want to commend you on your shocked voice, which was the same voice for both males and females, but that was kind of cool. So when we're talking about the trauma performance connection associated with erectile dysfunction, I guess the problem is there may be underlying physical reasons why, right? Like some men have erectile dysfunction for physical reasons, but it's also once you have it, it's that fear that you're going to get it again, right? Because once you've experienced it, right? Isn't that part of the problem with ED?
That's the problem. The problem is that you have diagnosis shock, which creates an anticipatory fear of it happening again, and then it colors your subsequent experiences. And then what happens is because people don't know what the root cause of, and I'll talk about that, because there are different causes for the original experience, instead of treating the cause, they actually try to treat the anxiety by taking a pill.
Right.
So now the pharmaceutical industry is making a lot of money on people's anticipatory phobias.
Yeah, so I understand how we can get to the point where, you know, people might be medicating for that anxiety. But erectile dysfunction can certainly have physical sources, right? I mean, you did mention there are some physical sources. So what are they?
Well, for example, I had a young man come in to see me. He was in his 20s. He had a learning disability, an ADD, but he had severe brain injury. He'd been in some car accidents, and it was causing physical injury, trauma to the brain, and dysfunction. So we went to treat the dysfunction in the brain from the injuries, and we tested through the list of symptoms that could be caused by brain injury. And I had a category called other. And he tested that he had an other symptom from the brain injury. And I asked what it was, and he said it was erectile dysfunction. I said, all right, well, brains do a lot of things. So I treated him for the brain injury. We healed his brain. And 2 weeks later, he came back and he said, it's working now. And I, of course, didn't remember what we'd done last session. So I said, what's working? And then he, you know, gave me a thumbs up. And I'm like, oh, great. I'm happy to hear that.
When people come to you specifically and they're talking about a symptomology that includes erectile dysfunction, I presume that, you know, you're asking them whether or not there's, you know, if they understand what the underlying cause of the erectile dysfunction is before you start your treatment, right?
Yes.
And do they always know what it is? I mean, is there, like, can you do your therapy before they understand what the physical causes may be?
So healing from the body level up gets information from the client using muscle testing.
Right.
Muscle testing is like lie detector testing. Their soul leads the healing. So we muscle test the client's deepest wisdom, which is my word for soul, and we ask the soul, what is the highest priority goal? And if the highest priority goal is to cure the erectile dysfunction, then I ask what the cause is. And I have a list of patterns that run at the conscious level, the unconscious level, the body, the soul level. I have a list of patterns that we muscle test through the list to get the answer to the cause. So, for example, I had somebody who had erectile dysfunction when he was 29 years old. That was the first time he had it. He was dating a woman that he was afraid of, basically. She was very exciting, and he eventually married her. But it turns out that the reason that he had erectile dysfunction is because his conscious mind wanted to have sex with her, but his unconscious mind was afraid of her. And his body wanted to have sex because bodies like to have sex. And his soul didn't want to have sex with her either because it was picking up on some issues that really needed to be worked out before he jumped in, so to speak. So it turns out that when somebody wants to have sex, it's really important that their conscious mind, their unconscious mind, their body, and their soul all want to do it at the same time. In the matters of sex, it's not a democracy. It has to be unanimous. All the levels have to want it. So the reason he had erectile dysfunction was two of his levels didn't want to do it. And that's what happened physically. But they repaired the relationship, and he did eventually marry her. Then they did get divorced. And umpteen years later, he was worried. He was still worried because he was having a new girlfriend. He had performance anxiety. And it turns out that it was that initial trauma at age 29 that set up the anticipatory phobia. But the reason that he had the original experience was because his levels were not aligned on having sex with this woman.
So what do you do in that circumstance? If somebody on the soul level and not the physical level can't engage and is suffering from ED, how do you deal with that? What work do you do?
Well, I have a menu of 52 different techniques that will actually release stuck energy. And if the soul said, I didn't want to do it because I had my doubts and I need to release those now I would ask which technique to use, and we would release the stuck energy in minutes, and it would be gone. It'd be not a problem.
Okay, what if it's something else?
Well, for example, the man I talked about who had the new girlfriend, mm-hmm. And had the performance anxiety, I muscle tested to see if there was going to be a real problem. And the answer is that he was 65 years old, and his body was only making 50% of the testosterone that it needed. So I recommended that he see his doctor and get his blood levels tested and do testosterone replacement, and then he wouldn't have anxiety about it because he would have treated the real cause.
For the 29-year-old who was fearful of his partner,
yeah.
Was he fearful of his partner because of himself or because of his partner? In other words, did he feel he wasn't attractive, or he felt, I don't know what issue he had specifically, but it would seem that if it was her, then that shouldn't have manifested with subsequent circumstances. Whereas if it was something he felt about himself, maybe that's why it happened again after he divorced his first partner. Does that make sense?
Yes. In that case, I didn't actually ask him why his levels weren't aligned with that woman.
Oh, interesting.
I didn't ask that.
Why not?
I just treated the original trauma and moving forward.
So you didn't understand, you identified there was a trauma, but mm-hmm. did you identify the nature of the trauma or just that it was recurring?
Well, once you have a trauma imprint, it stays with you forever until you remove it with the right technique.
Okay.
It was just the same trauma repeated. He had an experience of erectile dysfunction, and then that one experience translated forward for the next, 20, 30 years.
So it wasn't necessarily logically connected. In other words, it was more experiential. It was the fear that he was going to have it again.
Right.
Right? So it's the same physical manifestation. It's the same result physically, ED, but really his issue was different. The first time it was because he was afraid of his partner. The second time he was afraid it was going to happen again, which are two different
yes.
things, right?
Exactly.
I'm a little slow on the uptake, but eventually I get there.
No, it's exactly right.
Okay.
Perfect.
Well, that's very interesting. Thanks for coming on the show today.
Oh, it was great. I really enjoyed it.
That was Dr. Judith Swack. We have to take a short break, but when we return, we'll discuss thyroid disease in women on The Tonic. Does your skin need some pampering? Treat yourself to a luxurious exotic oil from New Roots Herbal, organic or wild-crafted. These oils are sourced from around the globe and tested to ensure purity. Never diluted, they're rich in vitamins and nutrients for radiant, healthy-looking skin. Choose from a wide variety including argan, rosehip, or skin lover's blend. Now available in a stunning gift set, perfect for that special someone. Available only at fine health food stores.
Welcome back to The Tonic, your prescription for a healthier and happier life. Here's your host and publisher of The Tonic newsletter, Jamie Busson.
Laz Boris is president of the Thyroid Foundation of Canada, a national patient organization dedicated to the support, education, research, advocacy, and empowerment of Canadians living with thyroid conditions. Laz was diagnosed with hypopituitarism in 1988 after the discovery that his pituitary gland was absent, resulting in secondary hypothyroidism, alongside other hormone deficiencies. His transformation after beginning hormone replacement therapy led him to become a TFC volunteer that same year. He spent more than 14 years volunteering on TFC's helpline, where he has spoken with thousands of Canadians navigating thyroid disease. The majority of those callers are women. Joanne Koski was diagnosed with Graves' disease after two severe anxiety attacks while driving forced her to pull over and face the fact that something was wrong. Without realizing the impact of what would happen next, she attended her diagnostic appointment alone, left the doctor's office in shock, and has since spoken publicly about the isolation and fear that accompany a new thyroid diagnosis. Welcome to the show, both of you. How are you doing today?
Great.
Thank you. Doing well. Thank you.
So my understanding is that 10% of Canadians over 45 have thyroid dysfunction, and that condition is four times more prevalent in women. I also understand there's a four-year gap in diagnosis for women. In those circumstances, understanding those facts, what are the challenges in diagnosing thyroid disease generally and for women?
Before we get into that, the answer to that question, I wanted to give you a quick background on thyroid disease and what are the different symptoms of it. So the thyroid gland produces a thyroid hormone, which acts as an accelerator or decelerator for all systems in the body. So if you're getting too much thyroid hormone, you have a specific set of symptoms, and they typically are wide-ranging. If you have too low, if your thyroid isn't producing enough hormone, then you have another set of symptoms which tend to reflect all aspects of the body. So the challenge is for a patient is to be able to explain all of these systems when they see their doctor. And for example, if you suspect you have a hypothyroid condition and you go in, just mention that you have constipation, for example, you may get treated for constipation. So it's important to write down all of your systems, and I emphasize write them all down as well with any questions you might have, and give a copy to your doctor so that he can get a complete picture of what your situation is. So those are the things that help identify diagnosis. And then typically if there's a suspicion that you have a thyroid condition, the doctor will request a thyroid stimulating hormone blood test, or TSH blood test.
But what are the particular challenges in diagnosing the disease vis-a-vis women?
Well, first of all, over the years, most of the callers I've spoken to were women.
Mm-hmm.
I would say 95%. I don't know why. Perhaps it's men don't call as much. Could be that factor. But typically, it's a question of education, understanding about thyroid disease and having an idea what it's all about, and being able to actively try and get some kind of diagnosis. So I think it's a question of information out there for the, well, 10% of the population, that's 4 million, mostly women, that would be susceptible to this kind of condition.
So I understand that some of the symptoms of thyroid dysfunction sometimes overlaps with those with perimenopause or menopause. What are the ramifications of that?
So there's different types of treatments for each condition. And you have to understand that menopause is only one of those conditions that are similar. Now, I don't have the exact statistics of menopausal women, but I would think that there's a lot more than the 10% that have a thyroid condition. So because there's a lot of symptoms that are the same in both areas, worthwhile getting a TSH, thyroid stimulating hormone blood test done to rule out the fact that there is a thyroid condition blended into the whole thing. And it seems to be predominant with older, the older population. So typically, I would say that hypothyroidism, which is just one of the main ones, is kind of an end state for a lot of other thyroid diseases. For example, if you have Hashimoto's disease, this is an autoimmune disease, or Graves, like Joanne has, typically you wind up being hypothyroid at the end. And also we have patients that have thyroid nodules. 50% of the population has some kind of thyroid nodule, but they're typically small. But when they do get large, they need to be examined to determine what type of nodule they are, whether they are, for example, malignant, or whether they're just producing a lot of excess thyroid hormone, which makes a person hyperthyroid. So all of these aspects need to be addressed. But typically having a good collection of symptoms starts the whole process.
Is it normal protocol for doctors who are treating women who may be in perimenopause or menopause to actually conduct that screening test?
I think it's typically done, should be done. I don't have specific stats on that.
Okay.
But I would, if anybody's experiencing this kind of scenario, I would certainly recommend that they ask for a TSH test to rule it out.
Joanne, let's talk about the impact of your diagnosis, which I touched upon off the top. So what was it like for you navigating this?
Yeah, absolutely. From my perspective, Jamie, living with initially Graves' disease, it was quite a challenge and quite a challenging time for me. You were asking about symptoms, and Laz mentioned nonspecific symptoms. Very much the case for me. I mean, I was at the time in my late 40s. I had a very busy life, busy kids, busy husband, running around all the time as we do. And, as a woman, I think we deprioritize our own health. We don't think about what we're going through. And whether, the symptoms that we're experiencing could be pointing towards something more serious than just life. And that's really what happened to me. It took two very, very intense experiences with anxiety to push me to go to my family doctor. Truthfully, I didn't really know what was going on. I'd never experienced something like that before. I had other symptoms. I wasn't really recognizing them at the time as being significant, but they were there. And I ultimately went into my family doctor, and I have to say I was a mess. I mean, it was not an easy time for me. I was concerned, confused. I work in the healthcare space. I know a lot about a lot of different diseases, in particular rarer ones, but I have never dealt with something like this before. So fortunately for me, my family doctor listened to what I was experiencing, and she considered the fact that maybe a thyroid test was needed. She sent me for a few other tests as well, but it was something that she contemplated. I think I was fortunate. I don't know that all physicians will immediately go to something like that, especially when you're experiencing primarily anxiety. Often you would be treated for that particular symptom. So, as I say, I was fortunate, and very quickly results came back, and then we moved through the process. But I was diagnosed with something that I'd never heard of, that most people never heard of. And I didn't think about my thyroid at that time. I thought about the fact that I had something called Graves' disease. And truthfully, I focused on other symptoms of the disease, not necessarily focusing on my thyroid. So it was a very confusing time, but I was very fortunate to have a family doctor who, thought potentially that that could be the issue, and was very quickly referred to an endocrinologist.
So, in your bio, you talk about isolation and fear, which accompany the diagnosis. Can you elaborate a bit on that?
Absolutely. So when I mean, the isolation and fear really began at the beginning, and going through something like this, as a woman, the anxiety of just dealing with life, you feel very, your self-confidence is impacted. You don't really want to share that with anybody, although I had to share it with my husband because he had to pick me up from, far away with the car because I wasn't able to drive home. So he knew what I was going through. But it was very frightening, and I did feel isolated. I didn't really feel like there was anybody around me who understood what I was going through. I didn't, unfortunately, have the presence of mind at the time to seek out an organization like the Thyroid Foundation of Canada, partly because I really didn't understand that this was all about my thyroid. I had something called Graves' disease. It was strange. I didn't find a lot of information about it, and that made me feel even more isolated. Unfortunately, unnecessarily, because there was support there for me had I had the presence of mind to reach out for it. But, especially what came, was even harder, and that was the day that I sat down in the chair opposite my endocrinologist, and he, gave me my diagnosis of Graves' disease. I went to that appointment alone. That was a choice I made. I didn't really realize at the time that how bad a decision that was.
Right.
Because really, when you're going through something like that, you need somebody with you, mainly because you're in shock, when you're told, what's wrong with you. And it may not sound serious, as serious as other things might have been from a diagnostic perspective, but it was. And there's, it would have been much better if I'd had someone with me, but I felt I could handle it on my own. Which, I would advise others to not do.
Yeah.
And because ultimately you're not going to hear what you're being told, and you're going to need somebody there to, capture all the information that's being shared for you and just really hold your hand through it.
Time for one last question. How did the Thyroid Foundation of Canada help you, and how does it help others who may have the disease?
Yeah, I mean, I can start with that and then certainly over to Laz. But so as I said, Jamie, I did not have the benefit at that moment in time of the support of the Thyroid Foundation of Canada. But since then, certainly I have come to realize what a wonderful organization it is, and the support that Laz and his team provide to people living with a variety of conditions that impact the thyroid. And so whether it's Graves or Hashimoto's or hypothyroidism, you know, to begin with, or others, the organization is there. The website is wonderful. It has amazing resources. You're able to follow, you know, treatment advances and accessibility of treatment. You know, the organization is there to advocate for access to therapy. And I've been, you know, witness to that wonderful work. And so really just, and the hotline, the phone line that Laz is part of, you know, is just an amazing resource for people to be able to turn to. So there are so many ways that this organization helps people like me and others who are dealing with diseases and conditions that impact the thyroid.
Well, thanks both of you for coming on the show today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jamie, for the experience to share my story.
We have to take a short break, but we'll be right back on The Tonic. Feeling tired, low on energy, or simply not getting enough vitamin B12? Discover the difference with Purely Organic Active B12. Made with premium active methylcobalamin, the natural form your body absorbs and uses instantly. Unlike common synthetic B12 supplements, Purely Organic Active B12 contains no colors, flavors, sweeteners, or preservatives. Just clean, organic, vegan support for energy, endurance, and nervous system health. Purely Organic Active B12. Pure energy, naturally made in Canada.
Welcome back to The Tonic, your prescription for a healthier and happier life. Here's your host and publisher of The Tonic newsletter, Jamie Bussin.
Jason Nelson is the founder of Body Image Fitness and a coach specializing in fat loss, metabolic health, and longevity. A former competitive bodybuilder, he helps people build stronger bodies, better health, and lasting results through science-based nutrition, exercise, and lifestyle strategies. His mission is to help clients live longer, healthier, and more independent lives. Welcome to the show, Jason. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
So you reached out to me to come on the show and talk about biological aging, which interestingly enough, despite the literally thousands of interviews we've done, we've actually never covered. So what is biological aging?
In short, biological aging is the wear and tear on the systems of the body, as opposed to chronological age, which just gives you the number on your identification card.
Why is it important that we focus on biological aging as opposed to fat loss or our body shape if we're looking to exercise?
Well, when it comes to weight loss, not because the scale is going down, it means that your health is going up. So lately, with the rise of the GLP-1 medications, we're seeing more lean tissue and skeletal muscle being lost as opposed to true fat loss. And that sets the stage up for poor metabolic health as we go forward. When we focus on biological age and we optimize the systems of the body, we lose fat as a positive side effect, and we improve health outcomes at the same time. So not because we are losing weight, that means we are getting healthier. But once we, again, address the systems of the body, fat loss becomes a desired side effect.
Right. And you gave the specific example of people on GLP-1 agonists who are losing muscle mass, which is not only affecting their overall health in terms of strength, but also mobility, because there's less muscle to protect tendons and bones, etc. Is that what you're seeing as well?
Yes, we're seeing, in my practice, we're seeing that. So we have developed a specific protocol for GLP-1 users. So we improve what we call functional strength, the strength that you need to carry out relatively easy daily tasks at ease.
So I was just reading online that grip strength is a huge indicator of longevity. Is that something that you're working on? Like, are you doing farmer's carries and stuff like that?
Definitely, it's part of our longevity program. Grip strength, farmer's carries, single leg get-ups, VO2 max proxies are all part of our program. Because if you think of it, the strength of your grip directly correlates to the strength of your body in general. It's not only a muscle thing, but it's also a joint and tendon issue. So if you use a GLP-1 agonist that removes and challenges your strength and your lean muscle mass, you inevitably decrease the amount of functional capacity that you have as you age.
The people that you're training, are they mostly, let's say 45 or 50 and older, or are you bridging across all age groups when you're doing the strength training?
Our practice focuses mainly on people over 40 because those people have the time and they see the benefit in approaching fitness and health differently from those in their 20s and 30s.
Circling back to biological aging, let's lean into the concept of epigenetics. Can you explain what that is and how it's relevant within the context of biological aging?
Epigenetics simply refers to the change in gene expression that really doesn't alter the underlying DNA sequence. Think of epigenetics as a dimmer switch that turns certain genes on or off based on environmental factors, stuff that can be influenced by your lifestyle, diet, stress, sleep, even toxicity. So once we improve your, once we turn down or methylate those genes, those unfavorable genes that may have been given to you by your parents, then we improve biological aging.
So let's kind of talk about those lifestyle choices or things that we do that affects our epigenetics and therefore impacts our biological aging. Okay, let's take them one by one. So let's start with the obvious one, which is maintaining muscle mass. What is that doing for us?
Muscle can be viewed as an endocrine organ, right? The more muscle mass you have, the more insulin or glucose, sorry, disposal sites you have in the body. What does that do for you? It keeps our metabolic health in check. Muscle mass also serves as armor as you get older. When you fall, muscle mass protects the body. It also increases our functional strength and our functional capacity to do things, to get out more. So muscle mass is vital to preserve as we get older.
What about supporting metabolic health? How do we do that, and what are we actually doing when we do that?
In terms of metabolic health, muscle mass is probably the biggest mover on your metabolic health. And to add to that, we need to address sleep. Sleep is the lowest hanging fruit, but it's the hardest one to pick.
Yep.
When we don't sleep well, we increase cortisol levels the next day, which increases blood glucose, the amount of glucose in the bloodstream. That now leads to cravings. And then you want to eat more carbohydrates, and that exacerbates inflammation. So sleep, in short, helps decrease inflammation.
So regular listeners to the show know that in addition to doing all the normal things that I do is I exercise 5 times a week. And as I'm getting older, I've shifted away from cardio, although I do 2 HIIT programs a week. I also have 3 strictly weight training programs now, which is something I'd never done before. But as you get older, your ability to do sort of power moves becomes more difficult because, you know, your tendons and bones and joints may not be able to take the pressure as well as your muscles. So I'm finding the difference for me is how I approach it in terms of recovery. Is that something that's important in your paradigm when you're teaching people how to exercise properly?
Oh man, that is such a good point that you brought up because recovery seems to be the thing that people do when they have time to do it. And that is something that I prioritize. And for somebody over 40, over 50, our prescription, if you are doing 3 really intense or somewhat intense strength training programs a week, that's enough to keep you moving for decades to come. You couple that with a bit of zone two cardio, right? 60% of your HR, and you'll be fine. You need to have enough reserve in the tank to keep your performance, to keep people peak performance. We focus too much on the flame and not so much on the oil in the lamp. And I think most people, again, recovery is just an afterthought when it should be priority.
So what does recovery look like to you? What does that mean to you?
Recovery starts with good sleep. If you're not sleeping well, your body's always going to be in a deficit. And then we look at nutrition. We always tend to focus more on the macros and not so much on the micronutrients. Those become very important in supporting good health. Then we look at relaxation techniques, techniques that help you relieve stress both physically and mentally. Because recovery is just, it has to be an all-around thing. So we have the sleep that takes care of that. We have the nutrition that takes care of that. And then we have these techniques that really bring the system back down into parasympathetic mode. Because if we're constantly moving forward all the time, the nervous system is not getting time to relax. And once we're in parasympathetic mode, the body gets time to rebuild and rejuvenate.
So you said something interesting off the top about how some of us are fighting our own biology. You know, we inherit our genes from our parents, and some people are big bones, some people have trouble losing weight. I have a horrible natural metabolism. I've struggled with my weight my entire life. Do you really think that epigenetics can make a difference when we have these genetic predispositions?
100%. If I didn't believe it was so, if I didn't experience it, and if I haven't seen it in my practice, I wouldn't be here today. Your genes account for 20 to 30%. Yeah, that's your genetic code. Your epigenetics account for 70 to 80% of all those codes that are being read by the body.
How long, in your experience, do the people that train with you see the epigenetic effects meaningfully?
Well, epigenetics, we look at it from a base level. It's how you feel. So you wake up in the morning, you feel energized, you feel rested. You don't crash by 2 p.m. You go to bed, you take less than 10 minutes to fall asleep. You sleep all night uninterrupted. That's the base level, right? That could happen within, I would say, 9 to 12 weeks. Now, if you go on a deeper level where we use data, blood work, to look at epigenetic markers, we move the needle. We test every 6 months, and that's when you see the needle starting to move.
And what happens when you stop exercising? Does the reverse occur?
Yes and no. It depends on your age at the time. For a younger person, they could spend less time exercising because their hormonal environment is optimal. But as you cross that 40, 45 age marker, you have to keep putting in the inputs to get the outputs you want. So to answer that question fully, yes, once you're past 40, 45, you need to keep doing the thing that got you the result.
Now, you just mentioned about tracking biomarkers. Do you want to elaborate on that?
Okay, so when I look at biological data, we do the epigenetic methylation testing. There's a couple scores in there, but I look at three scores primarily. One is called the omic NH, and that shows how you treated your body over a longer period of time. So let's say you abused alcohol back in the day, and now you are cleaned up and you're sober and you've changed your health. That still shows up on your health, but it doesn't affect you right now, but it did make some changes to your genetic code earlier on. Number two, we have what is called your organ system aging. So we track the age of 11 organ systems. And when I saw this, it shows that what you optimize for is what you get. Being a competitive bodybuilder, my musculoskeletal system, my inflammation levels were really low. But I didn't pay attention to my brain health scores because I didn't know I needed to do that. So I started seeing the systems of my body, certain things were aging faster than others. And that prompted me now to change my approach a bit. And the third one that we check is the pace of aging. If there are 12 months in a year, that would refer, that would correlate to one. We want that to be 0.8, 0.7, and that shows that we are biologically aging slower than our chronological age.
Last quick question, where do you get that kind of testing done?
We have partnered with True Diagnostic. They have the gold standard in epigenetic methylation testing.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks to all my wonderful guests, Joel Thuna, Dr. Judith Swack, Laz Boris, Joanne Koski, and Jason Nelson. And thank you all for listening to The Tonic. You can listen or download this episode as a podcast with full show notes, contact information for our guests, and links at thetonic.ca. To find out more about the show, you can always follow us at It's The Tonic on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. For more timely, up-to-date, and accurate health and wellness information, subscribe to The Tonic newsletter. Now distributed once a week, The Tonic newsletter, with content curated personally by me, will keep you in the loop. There's contest prizes, insider scoops, and so much more. Visit www.thetonic.ca and sign up today. If you're interested in providing feedback or suggesting topics for the show, you know you can always email me at jamie@thetonic.ca. On our next show, we'll discuss the health and wellness issues that are important to you. Until then, this is Jamie Bussin wishing you a healthy and happy week.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.